You're listening to the Mother of All Solutions podcast, conversations about careers and caring for today's parents.
I am Sarah Peterson. I have three kids. I live in New Hampshire in the U.S., and I'm the author of Momfluenced, Inside the Maddening Picture-Perfect World of Mommy Influencer Culture, and I also write the newsletter In Pursuit of Clean Countertops, and I co-host a podcast with Virginia Soul Smith called Cult of Perfect.
So welcome, listeners, to Mother of All Solutions podcast. Super excited to be interviewing Sarah Peterson today. You've heard her intro, but just to expand on that, she's the author of the excellent Momfluenced book. So welcome to Sarah. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm very conscious that, you know, you're at midday and I'm sort of coming up to my wind down day.
I know, the sun is like streaming in behind me.
So you said you're in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and where you're based and your family life first, Sarah, just to get to know you a bit better.
Yeah. So I live in a pretty rural part of New Hampshire, sort of near the coast and near a university town. And yeah, I have three kids, 11, 9, and 4.
Okay.
You know, lots of outside stuff, love gardening. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's really nice to know. Like, cause obviously I follow your Instagram and that's probably how I got to know you. And we're going to talk a lot about social media with your work around momfluencers, or what we in the UK would call momfluencers. Mm-hmm. It's still hard to say that, whether I say mom or mum, I think.
I know.
It's a hard term, isn't it? It's a bit of a tongue twister.
It is.
So it's nice to kind of see, like, hear a bit more about your personal life and, you know, I'm now imagining you gardening, not writing.
Totally.
Yeah. So Momfluenced is a book that I have finished reading and really enjoyed, Sarah.
Thank you.
I mean, it just sounded very intriguing to me. It's very, it's very well written in a sense that as a mother, it's very accessible and there's bits in it I can really relate to, and there was lots I wanted to look up, and I ended up spending a lot of time following a lot of the Instagram accounts that were referenced and getting into a bit of a deeper dive of like, yep, these people and what do they do and say. But I thought, obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought the main aim of the book was for you to share and comment on why people become momfluencers, but also why we as consumers or other mothers or want to be engaging with that content. So it was kind of that two sides of not just the people that create the content, but the people that absorb and either consume or reflect on it. So do you want to expand on your motivations for writing the book? Yeah.
Yeah. So both of those things I was curious about. And I think it really stemmed from my own personal preoccupation with momfluencer culture. I had such complicated feelings about it. On the one hand, I really objected to some of the super heteronormative nuclear family, white depictions of motherhood I was seeing. But at the same time, I found myself, you know, full of insecurities and doubts about my own motherhood, wondering, you know, if I could have a rosier experience of motherhood if I emulated some of these women on Instagram. It was really an effort to understand my own relationship to it and just how the culture is impacting mothers and, you know, cultural narratives of motherhood.
Yeah. And when did you start sort of following people or, you know, from a personal perspective before you even started writing? Like, you said your eldest is 11. Were you doing that sort of scrolling and either kind of feeling nervous that you weren't doing what they were doing or excited by what they were doing? When did you start doing that?
I mean, I'm kind of a late adopter to all technologies, so I didn't even get an iPhone until I was pregnant with my oldest kid. And I think I joined Instagram when he was like a year old, but I wasn't following anybody but like 10 people I knew in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't until I had my second kid, I think, that I found Naomi Davis, who had a blog called Love Taza. And she was on Instagram as Taza. And I was just completely fascinated by her.
Okay.
She lived in the Upper West Side of New York City, had three kids at the time. Super, super joyful, lots of bright colors, mm-hmm. beautiful photographs. And she really just made motherhood look like an adventure.
Okay.
And at the time, motherhood for me did not really feel like an adventure. You know, I had a baby and a toddler, and I was working full time in the home. And yeah, a lot of the time I was bored, and a lot mm-hmm. of the time I was sort of rubbing up against my identity as a mother and okay. feeling not super jazzed about it, I guess. Mm. So to see this depiction of motherhood that was like all smiles, all joy, all fun, all lightness was really, it was something I wanted for myself, I guess.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's super interesting because even though you're saying you're a late adopter to the world of tech and social media, say it was for you about 10 years ago and then 9 or so years when you got into it more deeply. Like for me, I only started an Instagram account and now X account when I started the podcast, which was about 4.5 years ago. So for me, I was an even later adopter. I don't know what that makes me. And I still really struggle with it. I still, which of course you explore in the book as well, right? We have a really complicated relationship, not just with momfluencer culture, but with social media in general, right? Like how much do you reveal? How much do you trust, you know? And there's lots of things that you said. It's I'm trying to think of like the good phrases that you use, like teetering between self-loathing and self-righteousness and like, you know, all these mm-hmm. issues that go with it. So did you, when you first started following your 10 known people and then finding Naomi's pages, were you following like broader influences, like this sort of style and beauty, or did you just go straight into the
Yeah, mothers? I really wasn't. And I wasn't even following her on Instagram. I was really just on her blog.
Okay. Because you're a writer, you like that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah. I missed the whole like golden age of mom bloggers in the early aughts, which was like a completely different thing. It was creative writers, personal essaying about their lives as mothers.
And sounds it was really more interesting to me.
Yes. It was super funny, super profane, raw. And I would have loved to have known about those writers when I was a new mom. They wrote about mental health challenges, you know, the difficult sides of motherhood. But yeah, somehow I just missed that phase. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't even know how I found Naomi Davis, but it was primarily her blog that I was drawn to.
Okay. And then the Instagram followed. Okay.
Right.
And this podcast, Mother of All Solutions, is very much about the people I interview and their work as much as the content of what they produce. So you said you were a full-time mom. Sorry, if I sometimes say mom, it's just...
Oh, my gosh. By all means.
It just doesn't naturally
no.
work for me.
Totally.
Let's just say mother, right?
I mean...
you were a full-time mother in the home with the baby and the toddler. So before we get into the book in a bit more detail, like when did you start writing? What's your journey as an author as well as a writer?
So prior to my first kid being born, I had planned on teaching. And prior to that, I had sort of a circuitous journey to this. So I did a grad program in literature with the intention of going into academia. Mm-hmm. But then I decided that wasn't for me. So then I entered a different grad program for education. So I thought I would teach English. And I taught English for a couple of years, like freshman composition at a local university, which I enjoyed, but not enough for it to be. Basically, if you're not a professor, you have to adjunct and you earn like no money. So it was not like a viable career path. So,
and motherhood is
totally super lucrative. So I had my first kid and, you know, there was no point in me looking for a brand new job at that, you know, point in time versus saving money on childcare and staying home.
Yeah.
So I was home. Motherhood was a real shock to the system. And then when my daughter was born, I... Such a random story. So I followed this other blog called Emily Henderson, Style by Emily Henderson, which was like an interior design blog.
Okay.
But she had really quippy, funny copy, and, you know, it was bloggy. And she had an opening for, like, I guess an interior designer to work on the blog. Mm-hmm. And I, for some reason, thought I should apply. So I applied to this because I was just like, I can write funny, quippy things. I obviously
interior
didn't get
design,
it.
I live in a house. I can
I obviously did not get it, but the essay I wrote as the application, like as part of the application, was so fun to write that I started to think, like, where can I like write these fun, quippy things? And then I just started pitching stuff. And failing until gradually I started getting yeses and went to writers' workshops, met other writers, learned more about how to do what I was teaching myself how to do. And I just kept doing it.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it just shows you that sometimes you do just have to put yourself out there and try and see where it goes, right?
Totally.
Oh, that's amazing. So you've got your flow as this author of doing the kind of like short and what's the phrase you use? Quippy. I like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a phrase I would naturally use, but I like it.
Yeah.
But I get what you mean. So you were kind of getting your style in that. And then you got into the influencer, momfluencer culture specifically and following it. Because you, as you say, you had like a personal reason. You were at home with a baby and a toddler feeling motherhood is maybe not quite the picture perfect image I've been given or thought it was going to be. So how did that like then obsession of following become something like writing? Like I'm just really interested in your story and as well. Yeah.
I mean, prior to me really focusing on momfluencer culture, I had written about feminism and motherhood for several years.
Okay.
And I think that trajectory very naturally led to an investigation of momfluencer culture. You know, there's so many themes to explore when explore momfluencers.
Yeah.
I mean, there's depictions of femininity, of domesticity, of, you know, wifehood that are all so tied to feminism. So I think it was only a matter of time before it, you know, my path led me to take a closer look at momfluencers.
Yeah. I mean, and you say there are way more types of momfluencers than you could write about in the book, but you talked about the cool mums, and you don't call it beige. What word would I would call it beige culture, but you,
minimalist.
Yeah. And then the third one, which you phrased the truth kind of version of motherhood, how you show every bit of C-section scar or pile of dirty dishes, and this move to actually the rawness of motherhood being presented in a way that's like, I'm not scared to show the ugly side as well. So I mean, obviously, and I think for me there's a, and I don't actually probably follow too many momflowers for a lot of the reason the book presents, because it can cause you more anxiety about your motherhood, or you can see the jarring between something that's about offering a brand some space to then offering something very personal. And sometimes that jarring is a little bit awkward, but it also sucks you in, right? You kind of want to be seeing what these people are doing and thinking or presenting. You mentioned Naomi's work. There was quite a few others that you focus on. Do you want to say a little bit about some of the people that you've spent more time following and what they offer?
Sure.
Yeah.
So one momfluencer who features pretty heavily in the book and just my writing in general is Hannah Neeleman, and her account is Ballerina Farm.
Yeah.
She's huge currently in the U.S. I'm not sure about her international following, but she is Mormon, lives in Utah on hundreds of acres of land, has a ranch with her husband. They sell beef and pork and a million other things. She just had her eighth child.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, yeah.
And she also was a Juilliard trained ballerina, hence the name Ballerina Farm. But
okay.
She, oh, and she also recently won Mrs. American, which is a beauty pageant.
These things still exist?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 okay, yeah. Okay. It's a beauty pageant for wives. And she won it. So she's just a really fascinating, polarizing figure. You know, the positive comments in her account are very much like, you can do everything and you do it with a smile on your face. You're the best mother. Mm-hmm. What an amazing example of womanhood you are. And then the critics point to the fact that she's married to one of the children of the founders of JetBlue.
Okay, so pretty loaded.
Yes. So coming from immense, immense privilege and wealth. Mm-hmm. And really her depiction of farm life is completely contingent on that wealth. It's very much a nostalgic, back to basics, this is how family life should be type of narrative that isn't accessible for the vast majority of people.
Hmm. Okay, now I have seen her account because of following you, and it is fascinating, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not the account I would follow, mm-hmm. partly because, you know, the US ranch isn't a kind of environment that I've got a connection with. Also, I would think someone with eight children, you know, it's not going to relate to my experience of working and having only two kids, you know, so I probably wouldn't follow. But I did look, and And also in reading your book, and I thought it was a really good point you made, that we can be quite critical of some of these momfluencers, but actually the amount of work that goes into creating the content and planning that and styling it or marketing it or whatever goes with it, it's a lot of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you also think they can't be doing that all and looking after eight kids. I mean, there has to be a team behind the scenes that, I mean, it's a machine then, isn't it? It's not just an back to basics portrayal of family life.
Right.
There's so much there, isn't there? And you just think like, okay, is there a film crew making this beautiful reel? Is there like, who does this stuff?
I mean,
or is it very raw? I don't know. Maybe I'm just like so rubbish at tech myself that actually some people can genuinely cook clean, look amazing, film, type all at the same time. Right. Can they?
I mean, I think, you know, it depends on the level of, you know, curation that these accounts have.
Yeah.
Like hers is not particularly like glossy, I would say.
There's
certainly other accounts that are much more, you know, they hired a videographer, they hired makeup and hair. Mm-hmm. And that being said, she presents herself as sort of like just a homemaker and just a mother when she in fact runs her own business. And she very much is occupying a position that is not part of her brand, which is really interesting.
Consciously detaching from that. Yeah.
Right.
It's all about the kids and the cooking and the home.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot, isn't there? Mm-hmm. And then you did also interview someone from the UK, the director of the I Mama Project.
Yeah.
And I love that book. I've got that book as well.
Yes.
So that was very much a collection of photos taken during lockdown that presented motherhood in a way that's, I mean, it's very beautiful, but often painful. And even in your book as well, when you write about your reflections on lockdown, I was kind of tensing up a bit, like, you know, it's all there. But the people who've taken the photographs are professional photographers. So it's not like me taking an image of my laptop and the pile of Duplo blocks next to my laptop. You know, these are people that know how to portray something in an artistic format. But yeah, you talked to the director of that about UK's versions. And I think there's probably a sort of type of momfluencer here that I have seen online that I kind of go, oh yeah, that's kind of cool or interesting or funny or says something to me. I don't know if it's quite as big in the sort of branded way. You know, you talk a lot about people sort of selling a product, like you yourself, you were saying, I get sucked into wanting that oil or that mascara or whatever it is. Or maybe it's just that I'm not aware of those and I don't follow them enough. But I think there is something for me that I still find slightly awkward because I don't know quite where I fit in the motherhood spectrum. You know, I feel quite ordinary in the motherhood spectrum. And so are we watching these things to be aspirational or to... I don't know, like, yeah. I mean, even you said even anyone with an Instagram account that posts anything about motherhood is a momfluencer, right? So in that sense, then I am as well. And I've got a podcast called The Mother of All Solutions. So I'm obviously wanting to engage in the discourse about motherhood. But maybe not in the way that I feel momfluencer culture fits with how I am. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just waffling, really.
I mean, you know, I say in the book that we're all momfluencers. Of course, I don't mean we all have monetized accounts and we're, you know, not all making sponsored content affiliated with brands. But I think anytime we post anything on social media, regardless of whether we're mothers or not, we are performing. I don't think there's any such thing as like a unvarnished, unself-conscious depiction of self online. So, I just think, you know, depending on how much motherhood content or momfluencer content we consume, we are influenced in our own social media posts. Like I talk about in the book, the pumpkin patch, which I don't know. Do you guys do the pumpkin patch thing in the UK?
Do you know what? I've seen it advertised in a few of the like kind of things to take your kids to, you know, of like take them on the farm visit. So, but I don't think it's got quite the same cultural significance that it has in the US.
I know. I wonder what your equivalent would be.
I don't know.
I'm thinking this is so an American thing, but I'm thinking like Wind in the Willows and like rivers and picnics or something.
I mean, my daughter did Wind in the Willows at school. So yeah, it does. But I don't know if we do.
No, but it's not like, what's a thing that all the moms were like, oh, have you taken the photo in the book? Like you guys must have something.
I mean, there must be the showsy that I'm so not this kind of parent though, doesn't it? I mean, Santa's grotto is a thing. You know, you take the kids to see Santa. Like,
wait, Santa's grotto? He's in a grotto?
Well, to go and see Santa. Well, he has to have an environment to be in, right? He's
not... But it's called a grotto?
Yeah, I would call it a grotto. I'm now getting embarrassed in case I'm just completely...
No. Because I'm thinking like Ariel and Little Mermaid. Like, she's in a grotto, I thought.
Yeah, I would say Santa's grotto.
Okay.
Like the, you know, the wintry kind of
totally
Lapland-esque recreation of, you know, something magical, something to take him to. But I'm trying to think the equivalent of pumpkin patch. Anyone listening to this, please message me.
Please weigh in. Yeah, I mean, basically my point is that, you know, when I was growing up in New England, which is a similar to where I'm raising my kids now, we might have gone to a pumpkin patch once. Like, I have no real vivid memory of getting in the car, going to the pumpkin patch, and taking a million photos. But, like, in New England, I mean, all across the U.S., regardless of whether or not they have, you know, like fall and winter and, I mean, like, snow.
Yeah.
Like, in L.A., they'll do the pumpkin patch photos,
on a beach.
No, they'll, like, it's a thing. And it's just interesting to track how these completely arbitrary, unnecessary, optional activities become sort of, oh, have you done it yet?
Okay.
So, yeah, there's
And people end up posting loads of
Okay. And it's an example of how when you see an idealized depiction of motherhood enough times on social media, it will infiltrate regular people's lives.
Yeah. So even as an ordinary parent, you're like, I want to be the one that's sharing this image, right? And this kind of like moment of expression of good motherhood or good parenting or
totally.
We've done the right thing. Our kids have had the experience. Yeah. So I'm trying to think like other things here would be like if you've taken the kids to like Legoland or, you know, places and you're like, oh, we need to show that. I don't know if it's quite as unique as Pumpkin Patch, but I'm going to start it. And I do love Halloween. I know obviously you guys do it way better, but Halloween
do
defies.
Do we?
Well, you do it like big, right?
I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean,
yeah. I mean, so I think in the UK it divides people of like who loves Halloween, and I'm a lover because I like fancy dress and I like creating and making stuff. So for me, it's good. But the people who are like, it's just a bit like icky and a bit.
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Whereas I get the impression that it's just
pretty.
Everybody.
Oh yeah, pretty much everyone, unless you have like a. certain evangelical Christian denomination,
and then it sort of feels like a jarring of
but like very like the vast majority of mainstream culture is doing it.
Well, moving on from Halloween.
See, I could talk these differences all day.
Another thing there was lots of things I found interesting in the book. But you also talked about how people now can't just present those moments. They've got to really show the tears and the... It's like evolving to the point that you've just got to reveal so much, right? Like the... And there is a momfluencer that I had to stop following because I was just spending either too much time or feeling too shitty when I... did follow, but there was quite a lot of tears would come up there, and I was like, but this is why they keep doing it, right? Now I've read Sarah's book, I understand that this is like this is part of the performance that is being really sold. So yeah, it's almost like that kind of escalation of these things, I suppose, as the culture of it has to keep evolving, right? You've got to keep doing a bit more, or trends change. Like what other things did you see change after the pandemic? Like, did you see a shift then in how momfluencer culture was going?
I think there was less tolerance for apolitical momfluencers. I think there was more of an understanding that there's no such thing as being apolitical, and that you know, if you're silent on politics and social justice issues, that is the stance. That's one. And yeah, I think a level of exhaustion with the one note, only idealized versions of motherhood. I think so many of us were so miserable and so burnt out that we lost the taste for those types of accounts.
That's interesting. Yeah. But something I find a bit tricky is it's almost easier to, as a viewer, understand your viewing when it is a one type of showcase, you know? It's like the beautiful interiors or whatever
right,
it is.
Right, right.
Whereas when it gets a bit, for me anyhow, a bit mixed up with one minute there might be the tears and then the next minute dressed up for an event that I've had preview tickets for. And then the next one is the, you know, something really personal has happened, but I'm going to put my spin on it before anyone else gets a chance to put a spin on it. And then I'm like, oh, well, this is now just confusing me. I feel a bit like I'm not sure what I'm feeling and what I'm getting from this now.
Totally. Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. Like I think there's nothing wrong with, there are some momfluencer accounts that really operate just like glossy magazines do, like lifestyle magazines. So it can feel very much like you're flipping through a page of Real Simple or House Beautiful. And in that way, it does feel like a straightforward transaction. And I think what you're speaking to is sort of when things become parasocially complicated. When the momfluencer is sharing enough for her followers to feel as though they feel as though they know her, even though they don't. And that's when things, I think, get dicier.
Yeah, and you can sense the PR machine as well, and you can sense the, the selling of the personal, not just the brand. And that's not to say it's wrong. You know, these spaces, social media exists, like, use it. And as you say, like, and a lot of what relates to Mother of All Solutions as a podcast, you know, how do mums in a world where we're not necessarily always supported in careers or childcare, how do we use our time and our skills and our influence to be seen and to make some profit to pay for our homes and our kids and our lives? So yeah, in some ways it's like, why not? But as a viewer, you can choose who to follow or who not to follow, right? Like, if I felt I was spending too much time either getting insecure about this or annoyed by that, just stop following. But it's hard, isn't it? It's hard. I mean, it's like you with Ballerina Farm. You're like, I love hate this thing.
I mean,
or not.
I mean, I do think, yeah, you gotta just have conversations with yourself, ask yourself, is this benefiting me? Is it, you know, negatively impacting me? What am I getting from this? Why am I driven to scroll? Am I looking for nursery decor inspiration? You know, that's like very different from, am I feeling shitty about my own life?
And, yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's sometimes you do have to take a step back and assess that. And I think at the end of the book, you'd like taken a break from social media and you're like, all right, I'm assessing my space with this professionally, personally, and and on that personal note, you did, and I really enjoyed the chapter in the book where you opened up a lot about yourself and your experiences of motherhood, and also your relationship with your mum and your memory of her as a mother and how that unraveled a little bit as time went on. And did you have the plan to include that in the book? Because I don't think that's part of your Instagram sort of presentation, is it? Tell me a little bit more about how it was to be very personal in that chapter.
I think it was necessary, so, you know, the reader understood what particular narratives of motherhood I had consumed and had modeled to me growing up, because I think, you know, your relationship with motherhood very much depends on the stories of motherhood you grew up consuming. You know, I think our own mothers, for many of us, they're the first model of what motherhood might look and feel like. And they really shape our expectations and our understandings of the identity. So yeah, in that way, I thought it was important to include.
No, it was great. And obviously I won't say much because, you know, people want to read the book and experience the story itself. But it was great that you could do that. And obviously for your mum as well to to know that that was going out there as well. And your sister you talk a lot about. So it's really nice to kind of know a bit more about your family and, as you say, where you're coming from when you're writing about this. And then, Sarah, with regards to like where this momfluencer space or culture is going, like, do you feel like there's kind of a new direction for it or some trends that we're going to see? Or, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
I think we'll always have the sort of picture-perfect momfluencers. I think the ideal mother is so ingrained in our cultural imaginations that she's not going anywhere anytime soon. But I do see so many funny, educational, activist accounts, specifically on TikTok.
Okay, I'm not on TikTok. Oh my goodness. That's another realm to explore.
I'm not either for personal stuff, but just in terms of research. I think you're much more likely to find a momfluencer maybe you know, talking about something really specific that she's dealing with. Like maybe you have a neurodivergent kid and you are looking for, I don't know, ways to help them with homework or something. Like you can find really specific resources, I think more so on TikTok than on Instagram.
And some of the video content is really good, right? That people are putting out.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. And some of these people, you know, are credited, you know, workers in the mental health industry or educators. And so, yeah, you can find really, really gifted people that way.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's good to know. And I think it's some of the things that I watch on Instagram that pop up as reels, you know, and the algorithms obviously then know what I've watched and what have you. I do find useful. Like my daughter has quite complex food allergies. So, you know, there's a kind of mini community of people and things that I've started following and feeling like there's a bit of a connection that I might not get in a very general space. And so, yeah, I think for very specific things, it can definitely do something. So, yeah, I'm going to follow those. And where do you feel you would like this sort of momfluencer kind of movement to go? Do you have a kind of desire for it?
I mean, it would be nice if we lived in a world where there was no ideal motherhood, where we weren't all trying to meet these standards created by white men to, you know, maintain and uphold power. That would be great.
Wish list number one.
Right. And, you know, I think the more mothers speak about their identities and their experiences, the less power that sort of ideal mother will have over all of us.
Great. Yeah. And just a bit of that variety within it. Yeah, amazing. Oh, it's so interesting, Sarah. I love the book. Now I'm obviously in the UK, so how can people access it here? Do you know what the process
is? So I believe you can pre-order it, pre-order the paperback, and yeah, you can find, if you want any more of my work, on my Substack, which
amazing.
Is very much in this vein.
Yeah. And I'm just doing quick searches. I think you can pre-order it ready for April. So hopefully then it will be out there in the space for UK readers.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, your Substack. How do people subscribe to that? In Pursuit of Clean Countertops, yeah?
Mm-hmm. It's sarahpeterson.substack.com.
Amazing. And it's Peterson ending E-N.
Yes.
And I'll put it in the show notes here. And you can link to your co-hosted podcast, The Cult of Perfect, through the Substack, right? You can get access to it that way.
Yep. Yeah.
I really liked your episode. I think it was your first one, actually, like unlocking your personal perfect.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of what you talk about in the book, Momfluence, but all those different layers of intersectionality and lived experience, whether it's about diet culture or race or disability, or just being explored a bit more with your co-host. So really enjoying that one.
Well, thanks.
And on Instagram, Sarah?
Yep. At S. Louise Peterson.
Okay. And you are on X still as well. You've still done.
I'm never on it. So okay. Yeah.
Just stick with Instagram, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Oh, Sarah, it's been lovely to chat to you. So thank you so much.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And I'm going to start a new pumpkin patch vibe.
Let me know how it goes.
Yeah. You'll see the pictures on my Instagram.
Of course.
So thank you for listening. And if you do want to connect with me, Laura Broderick, your host of Mother of All Solutions on Instagram, I'm at Solutions Mother. I'm also on X as at Solutions Mother. And really appreciate you listening today. If you've enjoyed the episode, please do subscribe for future episodes or listen back to past series that you've enjoyed or you've delved a little bit into but want to kind of listen again. Please do that. And yeah, I hope you enjoy and look out for Momfluenced as it kind of appears in the UK. Thanks everyone, and thanks to Sarah again. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.